Hello and welcome to The Week at Work. I'm your host this week, David Gibney, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Connor McCabe and Michelle Byrne. This week, we have a special guest on here to have a very important discussion that we don't talk about even enough on this podcast, which is surprising considering the name of it. We have Jerry Carroll, who's the People Before Profit MLA for West Belfast, and he's going to be talking to us about the Trade Union Freedom Bill that he has drafted and is preparing to put into the Assembly up north. Jerry, I'm going to throw straight open to you and tell us two questions, actually. One, tell us what the IR, industrial relations, I should say, landscape, sorry for using jargon, us trade unionists are famous for it, but tell us what the industrial relations landscape is like in the north, and then tell us what your bill would do to change that. And just to put a little bit of context on it, you know, we were saying just before we came on that we probably, Ireland and the UK overall, probably have the worst industrial relations legislation across the developed world, effectively. But on certain issues, yous are far stronger than us. And on certain other issues, we're far stronger than you. So we'll get into that in a discussion in a second. But just first of all, tell us what it's like up there as a worker, as a trade unionist, trying to have your voice heard.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Dave, and thanks, everybody. Broadly speaking, you know, unless you're maybe an activist or, you know, in a trade union or part of a sort of left or sort of radical party in the north, most people don't know that employment law is devolved to Stormont. You know, most people would not know that, which is, you know, raises all sorts of questions about the nature of politics in the north. You know, what's highlighted, what's seen as being the main issues, if you will, you know, getting societies where, you know, communalism kind of rules the day, if you will. And obviously, you know, there are some aspects where it's better. You know, my understanding of the Southern law is limited, being heavily focused on Northern law for the last number of years. But my understanding is collective bargaining rights are very limited, if not non-existent, in the south. There's a problem with them in the north, but there's obviously a bit of disparity there. And obviously what we're trying to do really is to let people know that these laws are devolved. We believe that they're regressive. They stem from, you know, Thatcherism, essentially, in the 80s, and her declared war on unions generally, but obviously the miners in particular. They said at the time, they'll neglect no opportunity to erode trade union membership, which is what they obviously tried to do. Some ways did, but obviously didn't take out the whole trade union movement, even though there was battles and fights and so on and so forth. And obviously, really, the laws that govern the ones we're trying to change in the north are undemocratic as well as being regressive, because they were installed before there was even a Good Friday Agreement, before 1988, and before there was any real effective or operating assembly. The two main orders, pieces of legislation we're trying to change, are from 1985 and 1986. So nobody in the north voted for these pieces of legislation. They're governed by them on a daily basis. No politicians, as far as I'm aware, voted for them in Stormont or elsewhere. And I think for us, really, it's about highlighting that, but also, you know, the wider context of, you know, frontline workers during the pandemic, keeping society functioning, keeping people saved and alive in terms of health workers. And you know, for all the establishment talk about, you know, recognizing the importance of these workers, well, this bill is a time for them to put their words into action. So, and it's getting good traction already, and hopefully it does pass through Stormont.
Yeah, hopefully it does. Can you just give us a couple of specifics within the bill that would we would see change? I know I'll kick it off, actually, if you want. The solidarity strikes. And the reason I wanted to kick that off is because we'd all be aware, most of our listeners are probably be aware as well, of the Dunstores anti-apartheid strike that took place between 1984 and 1987. That would be illegal down south, but it also would be illegal up north, is my understanding, in terms of it not being a trade dispute. You're not having a dispute with your employer. But your bill would allow solidarity picketing. I know that it's a different type of solidarity picketing, but your bill would allow that type of action to take place again.
Yeah, it would. It's a similar kind of situation in the north. It's currently illegal or not legal to have secondary strike action. You can't strike in solidarity with, you know, the health workers in the north or balloting, having a consultative ballot, and they may take, you know, strike action soon if the bus drivers in the north want to come out and strike in support of those health workers, their neighbors, their, you know, their friends or brothers and sisters. They can't legally do it. And that's, I think, the UK and the South and a handful of other countries in the world are the only places where that exists. But most countries don't have those kind of restrictions in place. So, yeah, the bill would allow that to happen. And obviously, you know, the right wingers, much of the media will probably, you know, cry anarchy and you know, what's going on with this proposal. And we'll talk about going back to the 70s, and no doubt they'll try all this stuff. They haven't yet, but we're expecting them to do so. But really, this is about democracy, allow people to exercise their vote in the workplace where they spend the majority of their day, and obviously, hopefully, encouraging solidarity. And at a time where we're seeing an attack on the cost of living, increasing fuel prices, and like I said, potentially strike action of healthcare workers, solidarity is essential. So this is one of the main aspects of the bill, and I think it would be a powerful part if it and the bill is pushed through and passed.
Connor, you wanted in there?
Yeah, Jerry, I just a question to maybe kind of like clarify just for listeners, like, what's the process here? So you're bringing a bill to Stormont. It doesn't have a normal executive that we would see. Well, it has. Well, that's a loaded kind of word that I've used there, normal and the north. But it's a different process to one bringing this out. So what do you need to get this passed?
Yeah.
Basically, you have a bill now. Have you brought it to the floor of Stormont yet? Have you?
Yeah, it's went through the first stage, Connor.
Okay, so
all boring, but it's basically going to second stage.
Okay,
in a few weeks' time, and that'll be the debate. The contents of the bill, what it's about. Parties obviously indicate.
And what does it need to get past kind of second stage then?
And he's a majority, obviously, so that's just over, that's 46. So that would be the likes of Sinn Féin, the SDLP, the Alliance Party, and the Greens. If they all support it, then it would pass, obviously. And that's our hope, that all parties support it. Although yeah, some were sceptical, probably will not. But if those parties support it, then the bill will go through to the next stage.
Right. And just like, what's the mood music like? I mean, like, you're hearing kind of good things, are you hearing kind of positive things from parties at all? Or
yeah, we are. I mean, we're in the process of having formal meetings with the parties. They get their, you know, official position or official policy fuel on them. But most of those parties that are referenced have some support for trade unions in terms of, you know, being on strikes or supporting strikes, maybe. Not all strikes, but, you know, some of them, and talk, those parties talk about being on the left or being parties from the civil rights era. And, you know, this bill is obviously about that. It's about, you know, workers' rights. It's about empowering workers to be able to take action quickly. It's about, you know, like I say, a solidarity action. So hopefully they do back it, Connor. It's obviously on them to do so. But we certainly want this to be supported and to go through, because there's been a dearth of trade union legislation, I suppose, in the South, but, you know, primarily in the North. And this would be one of very few go through this assembly as well, despite being promises made from the new approach agreement when Stormont was reconvened in January 2020. There's been very little implemented around workers' rights. This would be one of the few attempts, really, this mandate for parties to support it. So it's a private members bill, obviously, and it obviously requires a majority of parties and MLAs to support it for it to go through.
Michelle, you added in?
Yeah, just on that, Jerry. Like, what have the unions been saying? Have you got like public support from the unions, and have they been feeding in on it and stuff? And you mentioned like obviously the legislation in the South as well. And I suppose just recently, at the Irish Congress of Trade Unions Congress, there was a position taken to support the abolishment of the Industrial Relations Act 1990 in the South, which has, you know, there's lots of different similarities that are lots of similarities that can be drawn from that. And I was just wondering if the trade unions in the North are supporting the bill and what kind of feedback you're getting from them on this.
Yeah, we're getting very good feedback, Michelle. We're getting support from Nic Ictu. We've worked closely with them throughout the process, and some suggestions from Nic Ictu have kind of made it into the bill. You know, it started off nicely. Started off in 2016. If you want the full history with Eamon McCann, and he obviously with the new assembly wasn't in place again. I took on the mantle 2020. Stormont was reconvened through a process of discussion with Nic Ictu and trade unions. The bill kind of grew and developed, if you will. So yeah, a lot of support. We had a demonstration on the 30th of November, which was the day where the first stage of the bill was moved, and there was representatives from, I'm probably going to miss some of them now, but PCS, GMB, Unite, I'm forgetting some already, the Bakers Union. So a broad range of trade unions were there, and apologies for the ones that I forgot, but we're getting a lot of support from trade unionists and trade unions, which is obviously important.
Right. And one of the other things, right, I'm going to go back to where I started a couple of minutes ago, just in relation to what's included in the bill. Another element is that it will mandate more employers to recognise trade unions effectively in the North, and I presume this is across the whole of the United Kingdom at the moment, is you need to have 21 staff or more for collective bargaining rights to begin. Right, down south we don't have that minimum requirement because we just don't have the right at all for anyone. You're looking to reduce that because I believe 93% of workplaces across the North employ less than 21 employees. What are you going to change it to, and you know, do you think there's going to be big impact in terms of people joining trade unions from that type of change?
Yeah, well, that's the hope. That is the hope. That's the intention. I mean, obviously, we hope with the bill being moved and discussed generally, we're hoping that there's going to be a society-wide or a wave-wide discussion about why unions are important in terms of representation, workplace, health and safety, rights. You know, anti-apartheid, you obviously referenced there, and all these, you know, society and international issues. But concretely, you know, with the change, we hope that this is going to allow, I think, at a conservative estimate, tens of thousands of workers, if not hundreds of thousands of workers, to get a full membership and representation of a trade union. Because effectively, obviously, if you're in a workplace which is less than 21, we're trying to change it to five, over five employees. You can join a trade union, obviously, by yourself. You can, you know, take out a membership to anyone's online, but you're not getting full-scale representation. You're not getting full-scale rates. So you're effectively a second-rate trade union member as opposed to compared to somebody working in a workplace of 22 or more. So hopefully this will allow more and more people to join a trade union. And, you know, obviously there's been an attack on the idea of, you know, paying your sub is a waste of money and, you know, all this kind of nonsense, which isn't true, and obviously needs to be challenged. But hopefully this can actually prove and say to the likes of hospitality workers, you know, bar workers, you know, people who've been on the front line of the pandemic and haven't been properly protected or represented, that you have a stronger right and a stronger representation at the joint trade union. And also it could bring, you know, at least tens of thousands, if not more, workers in the trade union movement in the North, which I think, given the way society is going, would be really, really important and potentially transformative.
Yeah, see, I see that as the most important part of it. I know the other stuff is really important too, but, you know, I come across people in the trade union movement all the time. We talk about the bread and butter of trade unionism is that servicing stuff, looking after you when things go wrong. It's not. The bread and butter, and the reason that trade unions expanded, you know, historically was because of that ability to collectively bargain, whether it was on a workplace sort of scale or whether it was on an industry-wide scale. And by doing this, by making that one simple change, you're, as you say, enabling hundreds of thousands of people to be able to join trade unions. The only thing I'd say is maybe five could be lowered to one, but that's just me being a little bit facetious there. One of the other things you mentioned in it is about the notice period. You mentioned there at the start, you didn't get into great detail about it, but you seem to have the same notice period in the North as we do, 7 days. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the changes there?
For notice of ballot, 7 days. Yeah, so I think it's the same in the South, but we're looking to reduce that down to 2 days. And the reason being, obviously, that the 7 days and notice gives employers a lot of time to, if you're being diplomatic about it, pressurize people to not, you know, endorse a strike action. You know, if you're being honest, you could say, you know, bully, pressure, intimidate, you know, depending on your experience or your language. So obviously this is about hopefully tipping the balance back towards trade unions and workers generally in terms of putting a bit more power in their hands and also allowing them to hopefully potentially take action quicker and preventing employers to, you know, go attack them and put workers and trade unions on the back foot. So hopefully it will be beneficial to workers and encouraging action and strikes to happen more swiftly.
Yeah, there was a strike a couple of years ago, I don't know if you remember it, where the employer, when notice was of industrial action was given to them, local managers went around telling workers that they would have their social welfare removed if they went on strike. That type of action is not an anomaly. That happens regularly when people ballot for industrial action threats. And maybe you're being more diplomatic than me, Jerry, but I'll say it outright. It goes beyond bullying. People saying you'll lose your job, all the rest of it. You know, it's one of the things that trade unions have to deal with. The American model is to use the word inoculation, you know, warn people in advance of the threats that they're going to get from their employer. But another strike that people will definitely remember was the Ryanair strike a couple of years ago. I'm always banging on about this one, where the Irish pilots and the UK pilots had to give 7 days notice before they went on strike. But the German pilots gave 24 hours notice because there's no minimum period of notice in Germany whatsoever. So, I mean, if it's good enough for the Germans, it's good enough for us. Is there any other aspect of the bill you wanted to talk about before we move on but go back to Connor's part? Because I really want to delve into this. Maybe you don't want to, but I want to get into who trade unionists in the North should be lobbying. You know, because as a campaigner, you know, I always try and identify where, I won't call it the weakness, where the shortage is. We want to get a bill passed. Who is the key player for us to get it passed? But before we get into that part, can you just, is there anything else in the bill specifically that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, I'll not go through all the clauses, Dave, you know, because people may switch off listening. But two main ones is the limitation on workplace negotiating. So the issues that trade unions can negotiate in the workplace with their employer. So currently it's limited to pay, hours and holidays. And we're looking to extend that out to effectively include most issues within the workplace. So I think that could pay terms and conditions is what we're looking to add in to the legislation. So that could encompass a whole manner of issues, which hopefully, again, will provide more power for trade unions and people in the workplace who may see unions as more effective if they're, you know, taking on or able to take on more issues. And then the final main aspect, if you will, that I think is effective is bringing the balloting process into modern times, modern technology, and into the 21st century. So allowing for online balloting, online voting, a form of workplace voting, which protects people's right to have a, you know, secret ballot, and there's a process in place proposed for that. And, you know, the fact that, you know, we've been through hopefully the end of, but, you know, still in a pandemic for 2 years, and there's been no change to trade union laws that allows workers to vote online, on Zoom, on, you know, whatever format, I think is not only bizarre, but really shows you how the issues of trade union rights aren't thought about really. They're an afterthought at best, if even considered at all by the mainstream party. So hopefully that will encourage people to vote and get involved in union processes, but also, you know, save unions money who spend, you know, a lot of money on sort of union ballots. But also, I think finally, the reason why it's important is because people obviously can lose ballots, who move homes, who change addresses, all these things. So I think that's another important aspect of the bill.
Well, the CWU won't be happy with you. You'll be taking away a lot of posts from their members delivering around the North there. But but it is moving with the times, I suppose. I don't know, guys. Michelle, Connor, I don't know if you have anything you want to jump in with there.
Yeah, so... Oh yeah, Connor, do you want to jump in on your?
No.
Yeah, well, I was kind of going to be kind of unpick some other things around this. So, like, obviously the kind of the tax rate laws in the north and the Industrial Relations Act in 1990 in the south have like really disarmed unions and like restricted strike and solidarity and everything that we've talked about. But some people would argue that, you know, sometimes there's an over-reliance on this legislation, that, you know, people will say, oh, the laws are there as a barrier, we can't do X, Y, Z. So whether your bill passes or not, I think there's a conversation to be had around, like, you know, the power of unions outside of the legislation as well, or within the legislation, if you want to put it that way as well. I think, you know, that we can't always be kind of reflecting, oh, we're restricted by the law. We're always restricted by the law. The law, the guards, the PS&I, the justice system is an arm of the neoliberal state. So whether we have the, you know, the Thatcher laws or the industrial relations laws, there's going to be restrictions anyway. But I suppose, like, is there a wider conversation to be had around how we organise within or outside of those laws that are currently in place? I wonder if you've kind of have been having those conversations as well in the kind of forming of this bill. And I wonder, like, you know, if the bill doesn't pass, for example, you know, how will we garner hope for people who might have felt like everything was hanging on the legislation? Because I know a lot of people do feel like that. You know, how do we use the laws that are in place and how do we challenge them where necessary in order to create the change and the action, the power that we need as workers in unions as it is?
Yeah, good question. I think some people have used, you know, the laws, maybe more so, if you will, in Britain, because the law, the 2016 bill or legislation is more restrictive. You know, some people have used it as an excuse, I think, to not organise effectively in terms of, you know, pushing back against what governments do. I definitely would agree with that. But I think, you know, the content of what we're doing with this bill, which isn't everything needs done in the north, which isn't everything needs to be done away with in the current trade union and employment laws in the north, we're quite open about that. It's limited, but I think it will be effective if implemented. But the hope is, with this bill being brought, at the very least, there's going to be a conversation right across society in the north saying, right, I didn't know that these laws were devolved. Why haven't these parties changed it before? Why hasn't there been a focus in all these Stormont House agreements, Stormont Agreement, New Decade, New Roach, and all the agreements that I forget? Hillsborough is one of them as well. You know, why have none of these parties talked about labour rights, workers' rights, taking on Thatcher's laws, which are devolved to Stormont? And hopefully from that, it will get conversations flowing, not just in workplaces, but across society about what else can be done. And hopefully by that, you know, because, you know, I think there's 200,000 workers in trade unions in the north, possibly higher than that. So that's everybody, you know, somebody or is related to somebody who's in a trade union. And I think we can have a wide scale conversation around what needs done to enhance, protect, to further trade union rights and representation. I think it will be an important thing. And also, it's about, I think, bringing in the Stormont, you know, as I said at the start, in a chamber which is dominated by communism, sectarianism, right-wing politics. You know, at least there will be one day, at least, if not longer and more, where there's trade union rights front and centre. So I think even that is worth doing. But hopefully it does go further than that and is passed and is agreed and et cetera.
Connor, you wanted in?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, just on kind of Michelle's point, I mean, I've also heard this, you know, about, you know, well, laws aren't really that important. It's about kind of, you know, it's about kind of organisational like aspects. I do think that it should be made clear that what this bill does is not, it's not workers' rights, it's trade union rights. So it's actually about giving trade unions the legal power to organize. It's not saying, like, you know, who's your man? He's the hot new thing on the guy's Twitter. That's the law and that's the fact.
Oh, Richard Grogan.
Holy good fuck. Like, that's a real good example of somebody just bullshitting. Because, like, yes, he is right. Of course you can go to the Labour Court and put your claim into the, you know, under the Health and Safety Act 2005. Did he mention that it takes about kind of 2 years for that? No, he fucking well doesn't. Does he mention that when you go to the WRC, it's employers and anti-trade unions who are sitting on it, and the judgments can go either way. says none of these things. That idea that just because it's the law that somehow you will get rights, that's a real kind of middle class thing, you know? It's a real, real middle class idea that once you have kind of laws that you don't need trade unions, you still need trade unions to enforce those laws because the state won't do it. And that's what trade unions, you know, are for. And like, I'm kind of doing kind of Jerry's job here, but like what Jerry's bill does, as far as I know, is to give trade unions rights, not so much workers' rights. It, like, the workers are getting rights, but it's more about giving trade union rights to do that job, which is much more than just walk. Like, I would rather walk into my employer with a trade union on my side than a fucking tweet. Because I don't think I'll get far showing your man a tweet saying, there's a tweet here saying that I've got rights as they cut my hours and or sack me. And then I wake in 2 years and go, that's the law. And that's a fact, you know? So, yeah, you know, like we do need it organized, but like the proof of why laws are so important. And I'm doing Jerry's job here. I'm supposed to be kind
of
here
now.
Give the address to Stormont there.
But the reason why is that like IBEC themselves know how important the law is. IBEC, they haven't been doing it, they're obviously with COVID, but in the South, IBEC would most Wednesdays, first Wednesday of every month, they would organize a meeting for TDs and for senators in like Buswell's Hotel, where they would say what they would see as needed in terms of budgets or in terms of laws or in terms of any kind of spending. So they know exactly how important that kind of legislation is and like, you know, how important kind of these things are. They get it. Thatcher got it. Thatcher brought in those laws for a reason. And they worked. So hopefully kind of getting rid of them might work as well. And that was all free, Jerry. I won't charge you at all. That was all.
Hopefully it's trade union rates, Connor.
But having said all of that, and got my rant about that bloody Twitter guy. Man, that's the law. That's a fact. Fucking middle class twat. But like, but once I got that kind of off my chest, I am fascinated by the process because I'm a bit of a wonk here. So obviously you're talking to parties. I don't want to get into who's been naughty, who's been nice, because you're still talking to them. But like what's the mood music? And like down south, I would immediately kind of, you know, have the view, right or wrong, but it is the view from down south, that if you're going to have kind of resistance, it's going to be DUP and or kind of UUP. So is that a fact? you know, is that happening? Or do they also get that? Well, you know, because, but, well, the DUP are, I mean, they're on the rack at the moment, you know? I mean, I do think that's very interesting that for the last kind of year and a half, Jeffrey Donaldson has been talking about, you know, just collapsing Stormont, and hasn't done it because, you know, he's hearing it from the ground that they will get hammered. So surely something like this would speak to their kind of working class base, to their unions kind of trade unions base as well. So like, you know, like what's the, like, I don't want to put you like on a spot, but like, what's the, like, you know, what are you hearing back from the DUP and what kind of UUP?
Yeah, well, the DUP haven't historically been on the side of rights generally, you know, and that's put it very mildly, obviously. But our approach is, you know, we want everybody who will support it to support it. We're reaching out to all the parties. I think the problem with the DUP is that they're, as you say, kind of, they're in crisis, meltdown, you know, whatever word you want to use. And there's been some, I think, inaccurate, but some suggestion that, you know, Jeffrey Donaldson is liberal or more liberal than predecessors. And I think that's obviously not really, there's not much difference between Donaldson and Poots and Foster and Given and all of them. But we'll obviously be seeking to see what their position is on it. I suspect probably not favourable, despite talking about you know, restrictions and COVID and all that, and using a real right-wing libertarian take on those health issues. My hunch is that they will be quite glad to maintain restrictive and regressive policies. If it's any different, I'll come back and let us know and try to figure out what went on, but I don't think it'll be otherwise. The UUP, similarly in a way, they're kind of, I mean, there's some members, some MLAs who were previous reps in trade unions, and under Doug Beattie, their new leader, they're kind of presenting themselves as more liberal than sort of the DUP, which isn't really hard at all. But also, Doug Beattie is a more liberal leader than his predecessor, which I think, again, isn't really accurate and is very limited. And I can go into that in detail if you want. But yeah, so I'm expecting opposition likely from the DUP. I don't know how the UUP will vote or will cast their opinions on it. But I hope from other parties, broadly speaking, there will be support.
Greens and like Alliance and like Sinn Féin, there's good kind of music kind of coming from those parties. Is there?
I would hope so. There's been limited conversations. It's been early stages in terms of conversations with most of the parties. You know, Greens have been supportive. One of our MLAs was down at the launch the 30th of November. But I hope that other parties will support it as well, and give them how they present themselves politically on the spectrum. If they can't support a bill which is about important changes to trade union laws, but isn't the revolution, you know what I mean? Then there's serious questions about what those parties are doing.
Can I ask, when is the vote, Gerry?
We don't know. Is the honest answer. Stormont is rescheduling its business. So it probably will be towards the end of January, is what we're looking at the minute. That's subject to possible change from the business committee meeting and the siding agendas and all that, but probably the end of January sometime.
And just if people want to find out more about the bill itself, where can they go to find out?
Yeah, there's a website, tradeunionfreedombill.com, and there's details on my Facebook and Twitter as well that I've been sharing, so people can check it out there as well.
And is there anything you ask? But presume you're asking people if they're listening in the north, and by the way, we do get 25% of our listeners in the north. So if there are people listening, you're asking them to lobby their MLAs.
Yeah, please do so. There's a link to a letter, an email template that you can send your MLA on that website that you can copy and paste. It's quite an easy job and task. And send your MLA and implore to back this bill when the vote comes up in a few weeks' time. That would be excellent.
Yeah, I don't know, guys, if you have anything else you wanted to jump in with there. The only thing I'll say is that whenever I'm doing, you know, research, obviously I work in a union that has companies that operate both sides of the divide in across the island, you know, and there's always that comparator. We can't pay more because they're paying less up there and labor costs are cheaper. And one of the things from an economic and social perspective is, you know, this island is an outlier when it comes to low pay across Europe, you know, and that feeds through into the deprivation figures, the food poverty issues, the excess winter mortality deaths. Ireland has the highest, the island of Ireland has the highest fuel poverty rates and the highest excess winter mortality rates. All that stuff is as a result of workers not having rights to be able to collectively bargain and win pay increases that help them to feed their families or to pay their bills or whatever else it is. So it's really important, not only from that perspective, to address the issues that you have up north, but also that we can compete in the opposite way to trade unions down south and look for bills, similar bills to what you're trying to put in there, because that would 90% or more of what you've got in there is an advance on what we have down south too. So it's really important for all workers across the island that we're able to support this type of a bill. So I'll leave the last word to you, Gerry, if you wanted to say anything about it.
Yeah, no, listen, thanks for having me on. And I think just on your last point, Dave, you know, we obviously want the bill to be passed and go through the Assembly and be beneficial to workers and society generally across the North, but also it'll kickstart a conversation about trade union rights and the lack of them and the restrictive legislation in the South. Maybe in Britain, and maybe elsewhere if we're being ambitious. So we obviously want to, we'll start from the north and then we'll spread out and hope that it, the positive nature of it and the aims of it will have a ripple effect further afield. But I think it's high time through the experience of COVID and the pandemic that workers' rights, trade union rights, are front and center of what's being done in Stormont, and currently for the last 2 years at least, it hasn't been the case.
Connor? And look, on that point, I mean, like, your bill got two thumbs up from the new head of like Unite, kind of Sharon Graham. And you know, she was pretty much kind of straight out saying, you know, this bill is the way forward. And what I also liked about that was that it's been covered that Sharon Graham's kind of new, you know, like new kind of industrial policy. It's the sideline kind of politics, which it isn't at all. It's the sideline, the obsession with who leads the British Labour Party, you know. And she says that time and time and time again, saying this, we don't care who runs the British Labour Party. It doesn't matter. But laws do matter, and rights do matter, and trade unions should get involved in politics. Just not get involved in kind of politicking, you know. But yeah, like, you know, she was straight out. So I mean, have you been talking to her at all, or have you, you know, have you heard from, you know, from Unite themselves at all? Or?
Yeah, you know, I'm a member of Unite as well. So just to clear that, and it was great to see Sharon kind of put that out there, and we're very you know, grateful and thankful for it. And I think, you know, I think her approach to the trade unionism has kind of injected a lot of people's confidence and spirit that, you know, you can take on employers. And there's been a number of wins, I think, already since she's been in, and you know, that's effective, and that's important, obviously, and hopefully that can play.
Well, you know, it's a bit, it's unusual kind of these days to see someone, and it's the early days, but to see someone who's actually walking the walk. You know, I mean, she made all these promises, said all these things, and so far she is kind of sticking to them, you know. And yeah, like that kind of idea that politics, laws, rights, these things matter, and these things hold back trade unions, and we need more trade union rights. And that means kind of getting involved in the, you know, that means dealing with kind of politicians, if not backing them, so to speak. But it does mean kind of engaging in the whole kind of process.
I think the problem that I understood from Sharon Graham's sort of take on was that there's an obsession from some trade unionists about the Labour Party just the shifting of the top table the sole focus, or the primary focus rather, being about, you know, who's in charge of the Labour Party. But I agree, obviously, you know, I think laws are important. Obviously, I would say that being an MLA, but, you know, what laws are passed, you know what I mean? What laws are prioritised? And going back to...
Well, your man on the car's Twitter, you know, he agrees as well, like, you know, so...
I need to check him out. I don't know who he is, but I'll
have to... Oh, for Jesus' sake, like, he has my heart broken, he does. Yeah.
Give him a few shout-outs for you, Jerry. You'll have a big following on the building.
Yeah. Thanks, comrades.
Connor might not know this, but he's actually much bigger on Instagram. So don't join Instagram, Connor, if you're not on it already.
No, I'm just way too old for that.
He's got 40,000 people following him or something there. So
40,000, anyway. That's a fact.
It's not the law, but it's a fact. Listen, Jerry, thanks for coming on again. We'll wrap it up on that bit. One of the things we've been arguing for on this show and other meetings that I've attended is the three things in terms of making a difference for trade unions: make it easier to join trade unions, make it easier for trade unions to collectively bargain, and make it easier for workers to take industrial action. And your bill seems to do all three of those. So it's a step forward, and it's an advancement that's desperately needed in the north, but desperately needed down south as well. So fair play to you. I want to thank you for putting the bill in, and thank you for joining the show and discussing it today. This has been the Week at Work. Thanks again, Jerry. Thanks, Michelle. And thanks, Connor, for joining me too. And we'll talk to you all again soon.